food as the famine continues and carries on, hitting the entirety of the population.
Israel informs the United Nations that it has ended its 1967 agreement, recognizing a refugee agency working with Palestinians, UNRWA. This comes after Israeli Knesset banned UNRWA from operating in the occupied Palestinian territories. The regime has accused the employees of the UN agency taking part in last year's Al-Aqsa flood operation without providing any evidence. UNRWA has warned that Israel's ban on its operations would lead to the collapse of humanitarian work in the besieged Gaza Strip. The UN Security Council has also expressed grave concern over Israel's decision, calling on the regime to abide by its international obligations. More than 6 million Palestinians across Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria are dependent on the UN agency for their livelihood. It also helps them with education and health services. Well, Palestinians are reeling from raids by both Israeli settlers and military forces across the occupied West Bank. Settler gangs have stormed Beit Aid near Ramallah, setting fire to Palestinian property and vehicles. Footage from the incident showed several charred cars and building walls where vehicles had been torched by settlers. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has raided several areas across the West Bank. Well, the troops abducted at least 3 more Palestinian youths during the incursions. They also ransacked several homes in a village in Al-Khalil Governorate. Israel has intensified its violence against Palestinians since the regime began its onslaught on Gaza a year ago. Since then, regime forces have killed nearly 770 Palestinians and abducted at least 11,500 others on the West Bank. Earlier, we talked to our correspondent in Ramallah, Naka Hamad. She says the incident in Beit Aid was unprecedented, as no such settler attack this deep inside Palestinian neighborhoods had ever been recorded before.
Settlers from a nearby settlement attacked Al-Bir city, burning down 20 Palestinian cars and 2 residential buildings. Fortunately, no human losses were recorded, and many incidents followed the operation of the burning of setting the flames to these properties, as when other nearby Palestinians tried to come to put out the fire, they were faced with a shooting of live ammunition against them. And when the staff of the PRCS, which is the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, ambulances tried to reach to the area where the settlers were attacking the Palestinians, they were faced with direct shooting. As eyewitnesses have told us, the attack was unprecedented. It is not the first time that the settlers attack Al-Bir and the surrounding areas of Al-Bir, but it is the first time that the settlers reach into the Palestinian neighborhoods inside, deep inside a Palestinian neighborhood this deep. Since the last 13 months, since the beginning of the genocidal war in Gaza, the settlers' attacks have increased tremendously. We are talking about more than 2,000 attacks in the last year. Those the ones that were documented, not to mention the ones that that Palestinians did not report.
Meanwhile, the Israeli regime presses ahead with its deadly raids on Lebanon, targeting the country's hospitals and medical centers. The Israeli military carried out a raid in the vicinity of a hospital in the southern town of Tebnan, causing severe damage and injuring at least 10 civilians. Another hospital in the eastern city of Baalbek, which was crowded with patients, was also struck and sustained damage. Meanwhile, an Israeli raid on the town of Mashkara in western Baqaa killed 5 people and injured 3 others. The southern town of Bazireya also witnessed a raid that killed at least 2 paramedics there. Now, according to a previous statement by the WHO, at least 85 Lebanese health workers have been killed and dozens of others injured since late September. According to the Lebanese Health Ministry, over 2,900 people have been killed and 13,000 others injured since the start of the Israeli aggression against the country in October of last year. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier from Lebanon's southern city of Sidon with an update on the Israeli aggression.
So we are in Sidon, or Saida as it is known here in Lebanon. This is considered the gate of South Lebanon. This is one of the first cities that comes right after Beirut as you enter towards South Lebanon. Of course, here this is an area which houses tens of thousands at least of people who were displaced from the deeper south trying to take refuge. And despite that, we still see the Israelis striking this area in various different instances. The strikes is just one of the examples of the Israeli strikes here on residential buildings, and how the destruction has caused, of course, although it is only on the first floor, but of course many of the people who were living in that building specifically had to leave and had to evacuate. And even in the surrounding buildings, although we know that people, when they first came from South Lebanon, there were many apartments that were open for the displaced, even for free, and so they remained here until this strike just several days ago. There were several damages also on the vehicles that are in the surroundings. Some vehicles were also burnt completely, and this is just one of at least three other strikes. We learned that there were, in one of the strikes which we visited just earlier, there were at least three martyrs and five injured, and it seemed that they were all civilians. There was a woman who was going there to check on her apartment with her son, their 13-year-old son. She was killed.
Pro-Palestinian protesters have taken to the streets in Japan and Germany to condemn the Israeli regime's deadly war on Gaza and Lebanon. Japanese protesters marched in the capital, Tokyo, slamming their government's military exercises with the United States, which has been the main supplier of arms and money to Israel. They also voiced their anger over some Japanese firms sending weapons to Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, people in the German city of Munich took to the streets to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Waving Palestinian and Lebanese flags, they held anti-Israel banners and condemned their government for hosting the, quote, Israeli war criminals. During a similar rally in Paris, a French spokesperson for International Federation of Journalists voiced her anger at the regime's killing of journalists.
Journalists on the ground are not spared. They're deliberately targeted, as is the humanitarian aid that tries to treat or save the wounded, even though the hospitals have been destroyed. Medicines and medical equipment swallowed up in the rubble of the Israeli bombardments.
She further slammed the regime for arresting dozens of journalists while preventing the media from entering Gaza so that it can, quote, kill without witnesses. Parisians held pictures of the journalists killed by the Israeli regime. Since the start of the genocidal war last year, 183 journalists have been killed in Gaza alone, exceeding double the annual figure around the world. And at least a dozen others have also been killed in Lebanon since then. Well, the naval forces of Iran and the Republic of Azerbaijan have wrapped up joint exercises in the Caspian Sea, codename Azarex 2024.
These drills were aimed at increasing the level of cooperation between the naval units of the two countries to prevent maritime accidents, collaboration in search and rescue operations, reducing the operation time to rescue vessels in need, paving the way for promoting maritime trade and combating environmental pollution. In fact, in these maneuvers we saw further cooperation and coordination to create a safe environment for the development of maritime trade.
Bazaghi said the drill successfully achieved their intended goals. He stressed that the exercises showed the determination of the Iranian Navy to ensure maritime security in cooperation with other Caspian Sea littoral states. The flotilla admiral said regional states can fully provide maritime security, and the presence of trans-regional countries in the sea under any pretext is unacceptable and intolerable. The Northern Fleet of the Iranian Navy hosted the two-day drills in Bandar Anzali. Two Azerbaijani vessels joined the Iranian destroyer Deleman for aid and rescue exercises. The joint maneuvers were themed cooperation for peace and friendship. Now to the U.S., where authorities there are ramping up security measures in the capital, Washington, D.C. This ahead of the November 5th presidential election amid concerns of potential threats. Stacks of metal security fences have been installed across the city as security vehicles take their positions a day before the vote. Now, these heightened security protocols are in response to the U.S. Capitol attack back in 2021. The incident took place on January the 6th when supporters of former Republican President Donald Trump raided the Capitol. Now, the incident was initiated by Trump's refusal to accept the outcome of the 2020 election. Six people were killed during the ensuing violence. Well, when it comes to the U.S. elections, the amount of money being poured into it has set yet another record. With billions of dollars in campaign donations, the lines become blurred whether the next president will be working for Americans or their donors, like corporations. Well, we're going to get a little bit more on this, joined by Kaveh to give us a full explanation. Kaveh.
Thank you, Marzia. The 2024 U.S. presidential election is on track to be the costliest election in modern history. With all this money going into the elections, what portion of it is from everyday Americans, Main Street as America calls it, and what portion of it is from millionaires and billionaire donors who have expectations of a return of favor? First, Kamala Harris. She has pulled in almost $1 billion in the 3 months since she was approved as the Democratic Party's candidate. She pulled in actually $81 million after announcing her candidacy. That put her with a huge cash advantage over Trump, outraising him almost 3-1, like in September, which he pulled in $388 million. So what about the rules of the game in terms of funding? Well, in the U.S., the Federal Election Commission enforces campaign finance and also transparency. Individuals, organizations, and companies, they can contribute to political campaigns. The figure, $3,300 per candidate per election in the 2024 cycle. Now, the Citizens United ruling represented a turning point on campaign finance. It allowed unlimited election spending by corporations and labor unions, setting the stage for what was called SpeechNow.org versus the FEC 2010, which basically authorized the creation of what's called super PACs. We'll explain that in a minute, which struck down other campaign finance restrictions. So Citizens United was very key in terms of the unlimited election that it actually proposed. Now, here is the deal with the super PACs and the PACs that we just talked about. When it comes to the PACs, the amount of contribution is not limited to just going through an organization. It could be actually directed to the candidate itself. Super PACs can donate unlimited amounts, however, to the independent organizations. PACs can't do that. Super PACs cannot give to the candidates, unlike the PACs. Now, that freedom is where it allows the wealthy to pump as much money as they want to support their preferred candidate. And, well, these are the top companies by election contributions when it comes to PACs. You have the red, the Republicans, and the blue, the Democrats. Almost all, except for the first one that's tied, are Republican shares. So there is a edge there, if we can call it, overwhelming one, that has gone to the Republicans, who have pulled in more money than the Democrats, pointing to how corporations believe that Republicans actually serve their interests more than the Democrats. And in the case of super PACs, well, they have spent staggering $2.6 billion on 2024 federal elections, outpacing spending in any previous cycle. Since the complete figures are not in all the way in terms of the confirmation, the total projected outside spending for the entire election cycle will exceed $5 billion. And when it's all said and done, putting it all together, this is how these two candidates have fared up in terms of what Harris has pulled in. When you take a look at the ranking next to Donald Trump, again, this amount of money has not just come from ordinary citizens, but wealthy donors combined with the corporation. And that's where the question comes about whether the candidates will work for the people or the big donors.
And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. More than 10,000 people in Gaza have been reported missing. Many are believed buried under rubble. But authorities in Gaza have also accused the Zionist regime of systematically disappearing significant numbers of people. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "The harrowing anxiety over their missing loved ones that has surrounded many Palestinian families for months broke the surface on September 25th when 88 unidentified bodies were found in a container on a truck that reportedly came from an Israeli-controlled crossing into Gaza. The bodies arrived at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, with no accompanying data. There were no names, no ages, and no locations of recovery noted, according to the Ministry of Health, which refused to receive them and sent a truck back to the crossing from where it had come. We cannot allow them to disappear into an anonymous grave," said the ministry in a statement which confirmed the number of bodies. "Each of these individuals has a family, a history, a life that deserves recognition. We are demanding that their humanity be honored." More than 10,000 people in Gaza have been reported missing. Many are believed buried under rubble. But authorities in Gaza have also accused the Zionist regime of systematically disappearing significant numbers of people. For the families, the lack of information is agonizing. Ahmad Kafarno, whose son Salah disappeared nearly a year ago, described the torment. "For months, we have lived in uncertainty. Is my son alive? Is he dead? Now, we hear about these bodies, but how can we know if one of them is our beloved? No parent should have to bury their child without knowing, not like this." His voice faltered, as raw emotion seemed about to overwhelm him, but he kept talking. "We just need answers. We need to know." Without a body to mourn, many families find it difficult to process their grief. They cannot hold funerals or create a space to commemorate their loved ones, denying them closure. Khaled, whose 28-year-old friend Mahdi Abu Sido has vanished, echoed Kafarno's anguish. "Every day feels like a cruel game. You cling to hope and then you lose it again. And there is no end, no peace," he told the Electronic Intifada. Hesham Mohanna, spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross, said international law mandates that those who have died during armed conflict be handled with dignity. He told the Electronic Intifada, "It requires that the deceased be searched for, collected and evacuated, and that all available information must be recorded before disposing of the dead. This ensures that people do not go missing." Rights organizations have also weighed in. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor strongly condemned the manner in which the bodies were delivered to Gaza, emphasizing that Israel is obligated under international law and human rights standards not to mistreat the dead or their remains. Israel must take all necessary steps to identify the deceased, which includes recording as much information as possible and ensuring the dignified handling and transfer of the bodies without interference with their graves, the organization said in a press release. For the families, every day without answer is another day of suffering. Amina Nasir, 52, who has lost both her son, Nasir, and her brother, Muhammad, in the past month, said simply, "I have nothing left, no news, nobody, no grave, just memories and questions. It's a torture I cannot describe." There are broader implications too, beyond the immediate suffering. This issue highlights a critical gap in how the international community addresses the rights of the dead in conflict zones. The Geneva Convention explicitly states that warring parties must keep records of the dead and facilitate the identification of bodies. But without enforcement, these legal obligations are too easy ignored. The lack of clear information from Israel about 88 bodies has fueled growing frustration. The Palestinian Ministry of Health has made it clear it will not back down from its demand for proper identification. A ministry spokesperson, Ashraf Al-Qudra, told the Electronic Intifada, "We owe it to the families and we owe it to the dead. They are not just numbers or statistics. They are human beings who deserve to be treated with dignity, even in death. The international community's silence on the matter is deafening, and families such as Salah Kafarnos are left grappling with uncertainty." "My son was a kind boy," his father said softly, holding up a worn photograph. He added, "He deserves to come home, even if it's just to be laid to rest."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَوْ يُوهُ بِلِيهِ اسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani. He's going to explain the book Islamic Beliefs, Reclaiming the Narrative. This book contains the lectures delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei prior to the Islamic Revolution, and it focuses on revisiting the sacred scripture to better understanding the true purpose of faith, consequently changing the way we see life and the world around us.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, we're going to be going over divine promises. One of God's promises is that God will make the universe be on your side if you're one of the believers. I'm going to give you some examples from the Battle of Badr. Now, if you look at some of what we find from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, you'll find that the entire history of the Prophet was very rich,
But let's look at this particular hadith that they say is from Imam Sajjad. The Imam says this, Kunna nu'allim, right? So we used to teach Maghazi Rasulullah. We would teach the battles of Rasulullah. Kama nu'allim asura min al-Qur'an. The same way that we would teach surahs of the Qur'an, make sure everybody knew them, we would go over the details of the history of the Prophet, the battles of the Prophet, so that it becomes something that's now a collective understanding. Okay, I want to mention, not all of God's... So in the Allah discusses the Battle of Badr in many places. We're looking at one aspect of the Battle of Badr, which is God making the universe work for you. That's one aspect. I'm not talking about all of what God mentions in the ayat of the Quran about the Battle of Badr. I'm not covering all of that. Just some parts of it. Okay. So, brothers and sisters, I would like to recommend, because again, you and I, we have to work in smaller circles, and we'd like to deepen our own faith. I would like to recommend that brothers and sisters buy a book or look at this book online. It's called The Message by Ayatollah Ja'far Subhani. Very nice history of the Prophet, just to go over the various events. You'll get a lot more out of the history of the Prophet the more you know about it. Anyhow, now with the Battle of Badr. With the Battle of Badr, just for a little bit of context, understand what we're talking about and why this divine help was so needed. The believers, this is their first major conflict with the Quraysh. The believers have been persecuted. The believers have been hunted. The believers are not used to going toe-to-toe with those guys. Actually, for the Battle of Badr, what happened was the believers, their wealth had been confiscated in Mecca. The mushrikeen still had an axe to grind. The mushrikeen, because they don't fight qurbatan ilallah or qurbatan to the idols, they have to pay their soldiers. Their soldiers are mercenaries. They decided to send a caravan to go to Syria to raise money to then pay the soldiers to then go wipe out the Muslims. The Prophet, through wahi, realized what the plan was. The believers set out for the conflict with the caravan. The Muslims are hoping that we're going to get this caravan. The caravan's a lot of money. Caravans are light. It's not like you're facing a full-fledged army. Yes, there is security, but you're not facing a full-fledged army. You take that caravan, it'll be a win. The Muslims were in such bad shape. 313 of the Muslims went out. But many of the Muslims didn't even have swords. This is just how financially they were, right? 75% of the Muslims in the Battle of Badr don't have swords. They have clubs. Because you're stopping a caravan, right? 313 guys. I mean, you chase down the caravan, you hunt them down, take out the clubs. I mean, it's pretty easy, right? The Muslims had one or two horses. They said the Muslims had 70 camels. So what that meant was that the Muslims would be sharing a camel. The Badr is 95 miles away from Medina. So you're marching 100 miles in 5 days, and you're sharing a camel. So it's 3-4 of us for a camel. I get on, I ride, I walk, I take my stick, your turn, right? That's how the Muslims were. And you're hoping to get, right? Now what happened was, these tired Muslims who now walk this, who've never been in a battle, Allah knew the Muslims needed a win. Sometimes you need a win to get your confidence, right? The Muslims needed a win. Now what happened is, the Muslims are thinking that we're going to go and get a caravan, but you show up and now you're fighting a full-fledged army of people who've been bullying you for 13 years. And they're armed to the teeth. Right? Because they came out, Abu Sufyan, you heard, he heard that the Muslims are coming. He escaped, but then he sent a message to tell everybody, come out of Mecca, they're trying to get the caravan, that's your money. The guy came rushing into Mecca, the horse on the riding on the camel backwards, made the camel all bloody, everybody's rushing out. And so now they send out this army to finish off the Muslims. The Muslims are not prepared for a war, first time, but they really need a win. How did God make these Muslims win? Remember God's promise. He's going to make the universe work for you. It seems inanimate. It seems random. God's making it work for you. The Muslims are terrified. What does God do? This is just some of the promises. I'm going to mention some of them later that are just interesting to hear. Okay? Inshallah, if I remember. Surah 8, brothers and sisters. Surah 8, verse number 11. You see, brothers and sisters, sometimes you need to sleep. Being able to sleep is a blessing. If you're really panicked, sometimes you're so stressed you can't, and that keeps you from being your best. What did God do for the Muslims? We're going to see two things. So let's just turn to the verse together. Surah 8, verse number 11. And you're going to just see part of what God did in order to make the battle of Badr a victory. Because the Muslims were not going to win that. So what did God do? God says, so 8:11. إِذْ يُغَشِيكُمُ النُّعَاسِ. So remember, when Allah made you, He covered you with a sleepiness. The Muslims are going to go over and face this big battle. They need to get their hands dirty, but they're not prepared. One of the things that helped them psychologically is to get rest and be ready to face those guys. The other thing God says, He says, وَيُنَزِّلُ عَلَيْكُم مِّنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً. He also caused rain to descend. What happened? Why did they need rain? Two reasons. One of them, the Muslims were able to take a ghusl before the battle began. But the other thing that happened was the rain that landed on the side of the Muslims, the sand where the Muslims were became firm. It was a light rain. It made the sands firm for the Muslims to be able to advance. On the side of the enemy, God made it rain hard. The ground was muddy and sloppy. So they're trying to advance and they're struggling through their thing. And the Muslims are moving because God made the grounds easy for the Muslims. Okay, what happened was God also messed with the eyes of the believers and the mu'mineen. What happened? Initially, the mushrikeen didn't want to rock and roll with the Muslims. They were like, there's no way. The Prophet only came out here with 313 people. They were afraid of the Prophet. They were afraid. What did God, but God said the Muslims need to have this thing. So God did something. This is now the physical world. To the eyes of the Muslims and the eyes of the enemy. So this is now another one. This is Surah 7. Surah 7. And verse number 44. Wa'idh. So remember. Yurikumuhum. Idhal taqaytum. Fi a'yunikum qalila. God, those Muslims are a little nervous. One of the things God did was to make the believers see the enemy as few. Because otherwise, if the believers realize that we're about to fight 1,000 people, we have 313, you know, we have a couple of swords and some sticks, it would have probably been hard. God made the Muslims see the enemy as being few. What else? God also made the enemy see the Muslims as a little bit, so they would feel bold enough to attack because the war needed to happen. What God says, وَيُقَلِّلُكُمْ فِي أَعْيُنِهِمْ. He also made you seem few in number and their eyes. In order to make it easy, God made the Muslims seem like few and them seem like few so that they would rush into one another. After that, immediately God made the Muslims seem like twice their original number. This is another verse of the Quran. So this is Surah 3 and verse number 13. 3, so Ali Imran 13. So let's follow this verse also and just see again how God's helping. He's changing, making the universe work for you. God says, قَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ آيَةً. So Surah Ali Imran, Surah 3 and verse number 13. God says, قَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ آيَةً فِي فِئَتَيْنِ إِلْتَقَتَى. There is a sign for you in the two groups when they met each other. فِئَةٌ تُقَاتِلُ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. One group was fighting in the way of Allah. وَأُخْرَى كَافِرَةٌ. The second group was a non-believing group. This other group, what happened? In the middle of the battle, once the two sides met each other, يَرَوْنَهُمْ مِثْلَيْهِمْ رَأْيَ الْعَيْنِ. God made them see the believers all of a sudden. Once the battle started, now Amir al-Mu'mineen is killing your champions. Both sides rush into each other. Now suddenly the Muslims who you were thinking were small now seem like 600 people. Then God continues. He says, وَاللَّهُ يُؤَيِّدُ بِنَصْرِهِ مَنْ يَشَاءُ. He explains this isn't something that was just for that group of people. He helps with his assistance whoever he pleases. And then he explains that this is a lesson for all.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
ما رو هدایت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت، باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
راه قرآن
by means of Quran
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
اما این کافی نیست
But it's not enough
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن دوری از قرآن از قرآن
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran Quran Quran
کتاب الله
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's strategy in the region is backed by the U.S., which has provided unconditional support for Israel during its genocide of the Palestinian people, particularly in Gaza, and now for its military offensive in Lebanon. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Israel is embarking on a maximum pressure strategy in Lebanon, as it has done in Gaza, hoping that it will succeed in forcing a surrender by the resistance in the former, where it has failed in the latter. According to Amos Harel, an analyst for Israel's Haaretz newspaper, that country's intensive air strikes in Lebanon looks like a pressure campaign to impose a speedy agreement. The Zionist media reported recently that a senior Israeli security official told the families of Israelis being held captive in Gaza that the military will be fighting in Lebanon for another 2 or 3 weeks with the goal to reach a diplomatic agreement with Hezbollah that would allow Israel to secure a hostage deal. The strategy is backed by the U.S., which has provided unconditional support for the Zionist regime during its genocide of the Palestinian people, particularly in Gaza, and now for its military offensive in Lebanon. U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller admitted during a press briefing recently that "we've never wanted to see a diplomatic resolution with Hamas," saying that the U.S. was committed to the destruction of the Palestinian resistance group. There is little reason to think that the U.S. would like to see anything besides a total capitulation of Hezbollah as the result of any supposed diplomacy process to bring quiet to Israel's so-called Northern Front. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, made a historic speech recently, part of it directed towards the Palestinian and Lebanese people and delivered in Arabic. But it also delivered a clear message to Tel Aviv regime and Washington that there will be no defeat of Hamas and Hezbollah. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said that the regional resistance will not back down after the martyrdom of its leaders. Unbowed by Prime Minister child killer Benjamin Netanyahu's thinly veiled, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asserted that Israel is in its most precarious position since its establishment. Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the surprise attack by Hamas on October 7, 2023, and the year of resistance in Gaza and Lebanon that followed has brought the usurping entity to the point where its main concern is to preserve its existence, the leader said. The Zionist regime has tried to delink its southern and northern fronts by assassinating Nasrallah and several other founding commanders of Hezbollah. The Lebanese resistance group has vowed to keep firing missiles and drones towards Israel until it ends its attacks in Gaza. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, who met with Lebanese leaders in Beirut recently, said Tehran supported efforts for a ceasefire in Lebanon on condition it would be backed by Hezbollah and simultaneous with a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's speech, a rare Friday sermon delivered in public at the Imam Khomeini Grand Musalla Mosque in central Tehran, should leave little doubt that Iran will not back down from its key role in the regional resistance. Iran fired a massive barrage of ballistic missiles at the Zionist entity, forcing the majority of Israel's population to seek safety in bomb shelters, as military bases were hit in the center of the country in retaliation for the strikes that killed Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei emphasized that countries in the region have a shared interest in defeating the threat posed by Israel, the common enemy of the Palestinian, Lebanese, Iranian, Yemeni, and Syrian peoples. Unity would lead to the defeat of all enemies, the leader said, and Iran would fulfill its duties with resolve. Acting with neither hesitation nor haste, Iran will do what is logical, reasonable, and correct, he said. In the meantime, the Electronic Intifada wrote at least 29 Palestinians were martyred in Israeli regime airstrikes across Gaza. The UN Human Rights Office called on the Zionist regime to immediately end the pattern of strikes in Gaza on buildings acting as shelters for displaced Palestinians. The UN office said such attacks have become an almost daily event, with at least 6 schools hit in the previous 72 hours, resulting in tens of fatalities, including women and children. The UN stated, in September alone, our office recorded at least 14 schools struck in Gaza by the Israeli military, and in August, one school attack every other day. Such blatant violations of the laws of war normalized over the past year in Gaza, during which time nearly 42,000 Palestinians in the territory are confirmed to have been killed, are now being perpetrated by Israel in Lebanon. More than 3 dozen people were killed and 151 injured in the 24 hours prior, the Lebanese government said recently, bringing the total number of fatalities in the country to more than 2,000. More than 100 children had been killed in Lebanon over the past week and a half. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, said the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said recently that it remains concerned about the safety and well-being of civilians as Lebanon experiences a surge in airstrikes and displacement orders. The Zionist regime targeted the Masna border crossing between Syria and Lebanon, a major axis for relief supplies coming into the country and used by families fleeing to Syria in search of safety, according to OCHA. This group added, it is imperative that all civilians be allowed to flee to safer areas and that they be protected whether they stay or leave. At least 4 hospitals in Lebanon suspended work due to Israeli regime attacks, the AFP news agency reported recently. Also recently, Imran Reza, the UN's humanitarian coordinator in Lebanon, said at least 73 health workers had lost their lives in escalated attacks in southern Lebanon, adding, in the past 24 hours, 28 health workers have been killed, underscoring the alarming escalation of violence and its devastating impact on those providing life-saving care. Recently, the Zionist regime bombed a relief center in the central Beirut in another dangerous escalation, resulting in the death of paramedics, civil defense and relief officers who were actively assisting displaced and affected communities. Reza said such attacks are serious violations of international humanitarian law, undermining humanitarian efforts and threatening the safety of those providing life-saving assistance.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-7 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of this speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a thousand of veterans and active members in the sacred defense and the resistance field. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 25, 2024. The Islamic Republic, Islamic Iran, was something unbearable for the United States and the former Soviet Union. Why? The question is this: why was the Islamic Iran unbearable for them? We hadn't taken any measures against anyone back then. At this time, they tell us, you supplied missiles to such and such place, or you gave drones to such and such place. But back then, there were no such allegations. So what was the underlying reason for their enmity? This is the main point. The reason was that at this critical point in the world, an unprecedented popular revolution had taken place, which presented a new way of thinking for managing the world. The prevailing order of that day couldn't tolerate this new way of thinking. That was the issue. Back then, the world was one of domination. Of course, it still is today. But at that time, there was no voice, no outcry, no explicit stance taken against the unjust order that destroys virtues. The world order was one of domination.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
What does imperialism mean? It means the world is divided into two parts. Some countries are dominators, others are dominated. There is no third option. The Islamic Republic, the Islamic Revolution, and the Islamic system was a clear outcry against this system. What is the meaning of this? Why should there be domination? Why should a third country have the right to impose its opinions, cultures, and desires on a group of other countries solely due to its advanced military capabilities? Why? The Islamic Republic had something new to say regarding this invalid order. The oppressors and dominators around the world couldn't bear it. They understood that this message and ideology had the potential to spread throughout the world. They understood this correctly, and it did spread. This ideology spread and appealed to nations. Later, I will elaborate on the appeal of this movement.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among thy troops are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of